Well, good morning, friends. It's just after 5:30 in the morning, and I've stepped outside to go on a walk just before sunrise, and I wanted to invite you to join me this morning. So, welcome, and I'm glad you're here. I was talking to my brother last weekend, and at one time, he had an Apple Watch. And we had dinner last weekend at my parents' house, and I noticed that he wasn't wearing it. And so I asked him why. I said, "John, where's your Apple Watch?" And his response surprised me. He said, "It was just one more thing to charge. It's just one more thing to charge." And I was like, "Okay, yeah, I feel that." And he's so right. You know, is your nightstand like mine, just a jumbled mess of cables, devices, everything plugs in? Your phone, your iPad, your kid's tablet, your laptop, your watch, your baby monitor, your clock, your fitness tracker, your Kindle, your smart speaker. What else? You got to keep up with all the different cables, too. We've got micro USBs and USB-Cs and lightning cables and all the proprietary adapters that we need, too. Man, I'm overwhelmed just listing all of these things off. But let's be honest, right? The issue, it's not the cables, is it? It's indicative of something more. All of these devices that fill our nightstands and kitchen counters and desks, they need charging so that we can use the devices, so that we can stay on top of our tasks, so that we can be productive and do our part to help the world continue to turn, so that we can stay in touch with friends and family, or know when the package arrives at our door, so that we can remain on top of the newest trends on TikTok, or know when the new season of Bridgerton drops on Netflix, or find out who so-and-so is dating these days, keep up with the breaking news alerts, figure out which hot take to align ourselves with. Whew. That didn't help my feeling overwhelmed. Anybody else? And y'all, like, I say this with so much love and generosity. I think a lot about what U2's lead singer Bono wrote a few years back. He said, "I preach what I need to hear. I preach what I need to hear." And that's me most weeks, but especially this week. So here we are. Here we are. This is me. You ready? I've been wearing an Apple Watch pretty much daily since the day it debuted in 2015. My phone is my constant companion. I feel naked without it. And I'm always ready to take a picture of whatever amazing thing is happening right in front of me, without always being fully present to what that thing is. I geek out over voice-activated lights. I talk to Siri more than I talk to most other people. I have an app for everything. But I'm also not sleeping well. And I find myself anxious a lot of the time. And when I'm not anxious, I'm anxious that there's something to be anxious about. So I open up Twitter and I find it. Email. Whew, is often the last thing I check before I go to bed. My phone has often been the first thing I reach for before my feet even hit the floor in the morning. My constant connection has kept me always on and so in tune with and present to all that's going on in the world. Mass shootings and Supreme Court decisions and the war in Ukraine and a fragile economy and racially motivated violence that I feel on edge a lot. And when I'm not on edge, I'm just exhausted. The red dots in the corners of the apps, you know, those red dots that tell you you have another notification, those red dots in the corners of the apps on my phone quickly become the redness in the corners of my eyes. Breaking news. Another text to respond to, an email from your boss. Do they ever sleep? Here's how your investments did today. A new LinkedIn request. There's motion at your front door. Another influencer is live now on YouTube. A follow-up email with the subject line, gentle reminder, more Prime Day deals, that thing you've been wanting dropped to a new lower price. How did it know? Swipe now to put it in your cart. This, by the way, is by design. This is how it's supposed to work. It's not a bug. It's a feature. 2017, the founding president of Facebook, Sean Parker, gave a speech about Facebook's origins, and he said the quiet part out loud. This is what he said. Ready? He said, the thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them, was all about, quote, how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible? And that means we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented or on a photo or a post or whatever. This is by design. It's not a bug. It's a feature. Mission accomplished, right? At least for me. For as much as I value and want to claim autonomy, I've got to confess that I have very little. And I'm pretty sure I'm not alone. I had a professor in divinity school who said, we've come to see the world through a 5-inch piece of glass. Isn't that the truth? So what do we do about it? What do we do about it? If you were with us this morning at Woods Charter, you would see that things are a little bit different. You know that they are, because we're not live streaming, which is why you've got this. But also, in the worship space, we are orienting people toward the windows and not toward the stage, so that folks can look outside as we worship. That's different for us. We're also not going to use slides this morning on the screen that drops from the ceiling. We're not going to tell you to pull out your phones and scan the QR code to find our online bulletin. We'll do it again next week, but not today. On a morning like this, we also didn't feel it was right to live stream. Didn't feel faithful. It felt like mixed messaging. Like hypocrisy, almost. We'll be back next week, and you know, the world's not going to end because we're not online this morning. Please remind me of that if I forget. And it's all because it's week two of Camp Local. In case you missed it last week or need a refresher, Camp Local is our annual summer series all about experiencing and reclaiming and leaning into beauty, wonder, Sabbath, and reconnection. Reconnection with God, with self, with neighbor. It's our way of being playful. We've got, in the worship space, we've got s'mores, we've got a tent that we've pitched, we've got koozies to give away, and a fun old-fashioned lantern. So it's our attempt to be playful while also thinking together about what it means to live faithfully in a world that so often feels like it's lost its mind. Camp Local allows us to be transported somewhere, some distance for some perspective, so that we might ultimately return home changed. Last week, if you remember, we explored the cosmos and considered what the stars might teach us about God's expansive love, our call to shine like stars, according to the Apostle Paul, and the both perspective and company we find when we pause and look up. We called it Cosmos Week. This week, as you might have guessed, is Unplugged Week here at Camp Local. And it checks out, you know, because camp often takes place in remote locations free of cell service and Wi-Fi. So that's our reality this morning. It's why I'm coming to you this way. I'm glad you're here, by the way. So let's get into it. In the second century in what is present-day France, there lived a bishop, second century, remember, a bishop named Irenaeus of Lyon. He's one of the earliest writers of Christianity and theology, and he was a fierce defender of the faith. And in particular, he argued against something called Gnosticism. And Gnosticism is a heretical strain of Christianity that said, basically, that salvation comes through the possession of a secret knowledge. Or in Greek, the word knowledge is gnosis. Gnosis, that's where we get the word Gnosticism. And Gnosticism holds, basically, that anything spiritual is good, and anything material or bodily is bad and corruptible. It falls into this dualistic thinking that, in fact, many followers of Jesus still, to this day, cling to, whether they know it or not. Maybe more default to rather than cling to. And in response to this idea, Gnosticism, Irenaeus wrote what is perhaps his most famous line. He wrote, quote, "The glory of God is a human being fully alive. The glory of God is a human being fully alive." Let's say it one more time. The glory of God is a human being fully alive. How good is that? In other words, God is most glorified, most full of delight, when we are living fully into who God has created us to be. When we taste and experience abundant life, the life that really is life, fully alive, which raises the important question for us, what does it mean to be fully alive? What does it mean to be fully alive? And here's the thing. To avoid sounding like a Luddite, I think it's important to say that at best, technology, it keeps us connected, helps us find our way. When we get lost, it allows you to call those you care about most, maybe even care about generally. Don't know why I have to qualify that. It helps you find that perfect song when you're on a walk early in the morning. It has the potential to open up new languages and new worlds. So technology isn't all bad, but at its worst, technology can also dehumanize us. I'm sure many of us have experienced this. It gives us, it gives cover when hurling insults because you can't see the other person at the other end of the screen. So it doesn't matter as much how they receive it. It eliminates the nuance of conversation. You've experienced this too. Instead, limiting our dialogue to 280 characters on Twitter or 60-second Instagram reels. It reduces the complexity and particularity of who we are to a split-second choice in which somebody either swipes left or swipes right based on a picture and a brief bio. And so it raises the question, is this what it means to be fully alive? Our humanity reduced to data points, pieces on an algorithm, binaries? Put a different way, how might we reclaim our humanity in a world that's hell-bent on dehumanization? It may not surprise you that I think we find the most faithful response when we look at Jesus, the one who we claim is fully God and fully human. This morning, one of our scripture passages is John 1, 1 through 5 and 14. John chapter 1, verses 1 through 5 and 14. It's the very beginning of John's gospel. And this was John the Apostle's starting point, and I think for this conversation in particular, it should be ours too. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And then a little bit later, verse 14, John writes, "And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth." We have seen his glory. And that glory comes when the Word becomes flesh, when God moves into the neighborhood, when God is embodied, when love puts skin on. The fancy theological term for this is incarnation. Can you say it with me? Incarnation. And incarnation literally means enfleshed. Enfleshed. The Latin carne, meaning flesh. Incarnate. Enflesh. Incarnation is our orienting theological framework as the local church. I say this all the time. You've probably heard me say it before. Who is Jesus if not God made local? And what is the church if not God gone local? All of that speaks to the incarnation of God, embodied and enlivened. Who is the church, or who is Jesus if not God made local? Moving into our time and space, present with us. And what is the church if not God gone local? A bold and inclusive people of love on the move, incarnate in our communities, our homes, our workplaces, our schools, and the world. Incarnation is why we're the local church. In other words, it means something that God doesn't stand far off, but instead chooses to come to us in human form, in flesh and blood and bone and breath. It means something that God doesn't remain distant, but comes near as a human being to enter into the mess of this time and this place and redeem it from the inside. And among other things, it means that matter matters. That matter matters. It means that to fully live into God's image and likeness, we too must live as fully embodied creatures. I'll say that again. To fully live into God's image and likeness, we too must live as fully embodied creatures. To be fully human is to be fully human. We can't do that if we're only living from the neck up. We can't do that if we're exclusively experiencing our world through a 5-inch piece of glass. We too need to take on flesh. We do well to remember that we are embodied creatures, and that to be fully alive means to live fully in our bodies, to get dirt beneath our fingernails, to feel our bare feet on the grass, and to have blood and sweat and tears, and feel an embrace that makes your knees buckle. The metaverse can't replace our humanity. To live fully, we need to unplug and live as embodied creatures. Are you with me? That's why I wanted to take a walk this morning. Listen to the birds. Watch the sunrise. Smell the humid air. Experience the world waking up. But more than simply revealing the necessity of living embodied, Jesus also models for us what it means and what it looks like to unplug. Another scripture for this morning is from Luke chapter 5. Jesus is traveling and he comes upon a man covered with a skin disease. And the man sees Jesus and bows before him and then begs him, "Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean." And in the passage, it's important to note that Jesus doesn't simply look at the man from a distance, say a prayer, and heal him. Instead, Jesus stretches out his hand and touches him. He touches him. There's something physical there, and the man is healed. But what I was really drawn to in this passage is what happens next, as word about Jesus spreads and more demands are placed on him. People asking for help, in need of healing, longing to be made whole. Luke says that Jesus, quote, would slip away to deserted places and pray. He'd slip away to deserted places and pray. Which is interesting, isn't it, if you really stop and think about it? I mean, here's Jesus, right? God in flesh, who we would assume is all-powerful and capable of superhuman strength and Energizer Bunny levels of endurance, right? But instead of pushing through, Jesus unplugs. He retreats. And what we're seeing here is Jesus showing us again what it means to be fully human. As a human being, his body would have had limited resources, just like ours do. His energy would have been tapped out at times. He'd be vulnerable to hunger, fatigue, and fear, and stress. So that time away would be just as important for him as food and water. This is part of what it means to be human. And the same is true for us. A constant barrage of stimuli isn't sustainable. Staying on, remaining constantly connected, leaves us exhausted at best and volatile at worst. And what's more, when we fail to take time to unplug, we don't give ourselves the grace and the space we need to process, to pray, to find perspective, to heal, to confess, to be reconciled, to wonder, to reconnect with our life force. Jesus is not just showing us what it looks like to unplug and why it's important. He's pleading with us to do so. From Matthew 11, one of my favorite passages. This is from Eugene Peterson's translation, The Message. Jesus says, "Are you tired? Worn out? Are you burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me. Work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you," Jesus says. "Keep company with me. You'll learn to live freely and lightly." Matthew 11, verses 28-30. Here's the thing, and I want to make this clear. I'm not talking about complete disconnection from the world. I'm not talking about moving somewhere remote with no other people around and no access to technology at all. Although there are days, I'll admit, that sounds like a decent idea. But the connection is important. Like I said, technology isn't all bad. The connection often keeps us aware and active and justice-oriented and motivated, reminding us that we're better together, but just as important. So technology does have a place, but just as important is the intentional time to unplug. The intentional time to shut it down and to allow space for God to work in and through us. Good morning. I heard this story recently about Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his journey as a civil rights leader and how it began. And I was surprised to learn, I didn't know this, that it began somewhat reluctantly. He didn't come asking for it. It found him. Started simply because he happened to be a new minister in Montgomery, Alabama, in the wake, right around the time of the Montgomery bus boycott. And because he was relatively new to the scene and young and generally well-respected, mostly because he was too new at the time to have made any enemies, to have upset anybody. Because of this, he was elected leader of the newly formed Montgomery Improvement Association in 1955, organization that was active in leading the boycott and the protests, demonstrations that resulted. And this election for Dr. King in 1955 as head of the Montgomery Improvement Association, it caught him off guard, as evidenced by his response when he was asked, when he was elected. He said, quote, "Well, if you think I can render some service, I will." Well, you know, the boycotts and the protests, they dragged on into the new year. 1956, he'd been imprisoned for a brief period of time. But on the night that he was released from prison, released from jail, he retreated back home. And he felt that he needed some space that night. Away from the action, away from the crowds, away from the demands of his role, away from the imprisonment and the injustice there, away from the work. He needed space to simply process all that had happened in the last year, all that was happening now, all that he'd experienced, and think through what his next steps would be. And so once his wife and daughter had gone to bed that night, the Reverend Dr. King sat by himself at his kitchen table with only a cup of coffee and the Holy Spirit to keep him company, describing this moment. Later, Dr. King said, quote, "It seemed at that moment that I could hear an inner voice saying to me, 'Martin Luther, stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for truth.'" That space to unplug that night in Montgomery changed the course of history, just as it did when Jesus took that time to retreat as well and be filled. Imagine what it might do for you.